When the brightest day and the blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil smite, beware my power, green writers light.
Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 51. After a few days, I mean, partially to celebrate episode 50.
We're finally
going to hit on our discussion about the Green Lantern movie, which I believe is the first really divisive movie this summer for us. Joining me, as you heard before, we have Anthony.
Hello,
everyone. Dylan.
Hello.
And a special guest, Yasmin.
Hi.
Okay. At this point, it's been like 3 weeks since Green Lantern's come out.
Yep.
I'm assuming that everybody remembers exactly what was wrong with it, but let's start off by going around the table and giving your initial impressions of the movie. Anthony, go.
Oh, I knew I was going first.
That difficult to tell with me. It's usually the order I introduce you in is the order you're on my screen.
I'm going to remember that for next week. But, I didn't really like the film that much, to be honest. It's got a lot of problems with its script, with its CGI, and... I don't want to hate on it just for the sake of hating on it, like I think some people are doing. Because, you know, it is, I do feel kind of bad because I wanted it to do well, because I want to see a Flash film, a Wally West Flash film preferably, but it's just not very good, basically, and there were some scenes in it I like, but it was pretty boring, and there was way too much stuff in the intro of it, just... telling the audience member who would have known nothing about Green Lantern too much in too short a time, and then it's just with it, its problems, most of which are actually quite obvious, and you don't have to, you know, be a critic to actually notice them or anything like that. But I didn't really enjoy it that much. I'm just glad I saw it in 2D as well, because if I saw it in 3D, I probably would have left halfway through the movie due to annoyance. Alright. He's next.
Dylan's next. I just told you, it's the order I introduce you folks, so...
I guess overall, after leaving the theater, I kind of had a pretty meh vibe coming out of it. I mean, there are definitely parts I liked. It was fun, and I didn't really ever get bored during it, but it definitely felt like stuff was missing.
Did you just cut out, or is that just my...
It didn't go places it should have, but I mean, it's a decent movie, but for summer where we have Thor, X-Men, and looking forward to Captain America, decent isn't good enough anymore. Like, it should have been...
Okay. Yasmin?
Better. He talks
in broken sentences. Okay. Yasmin?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't that excited about it to, you know, going into the movie, but I kept an open opinion, and then I went into the movie, and like everyone said, it had good points where it kind of stuck to what we have in the comics, but then again, it wasn't that, you know... If you're looking at this, like, as a, you know, comic book geek, you can pick out the flaws really easily, but as an overall just a movie, it wasn't that good either. Like, I watch it, you know, if you really want to watch it, but it wasn't that good of a movie.
Okay.
Can I just say, I just want to add, right, I kind of got my turn to say it, right, but I honestly think, fair enough how some people like it, right, people can like what they want, that's fine, but I honestly think in 2 years or so, when the sequel comes out, people are going to look back, and the majority of people are going to agree that Green Lantern wasn't that good. Whether they're saying it now, or in 2 years' time, the majority opinion is going to be Green Lantern wasn't that good. I just wanted to say that before I forgot about it.
You see, I always don't like judging something against its future, or, you know, I always say things don't exist in a bubble, so you can compare Green Lantern to anything that's come before it, but it's hard to compare it to anything that comes after it. I'm not going to say, I honestly think that Green Lantern 2 has the setup and the makeup to be a much, much better movie, and that is honestly one of the reasons I kind of came out of Green Lantern a bit hopeful, is that it does kind of set the groundwork for a really, really spectacular sequel, if it does it right. That said, you know, it's like saying that Batman Begins is no longer a good movie because The Dark Knight is a much better movie. Or like saying...
Which is a lie. Batman Begins is an amazing movie.
Okay, so it's like saying that Spider-Man 2 is a... That Spider-Man 1 no longer is a good movie because Spider-Man 2 so far outcasts it. Or that Spider-Man 2 retroactively becomes a better movie because Spider-Man 3 sucks.
I'm just... I just think once it's settled... Because, you know, I kind of like... Now everyone hates Revenge of the Fallen now, even though when it first came out, some people probably thought it was good, but once you rewatch it, and once it's settled, and once it's out of theaters, and no one really cares as much, people are kind of like, yeah, it wasn't really that good, was it?
Maybe the people who hung around, I didn't know anybody who came out of Revenge of the Fallen happy with it. Again, that's from personal experience. I mean, you could have been differently, but most of the people I knew who came out of Revenge of the Fallen, nobody had any... The best thing you heard about it, and this kind of the same thing you hear about Transformers 3 now, is that it's a good... It's a Michael Bay movie, and, you know, you kind of know what to expect from him, where it's, like, big, dumb, and stupid, and stuff builds up.
Are we going into Transformers as well?
Are we what?
Are we going into Transformers as well?
We're not gonna go. You brought it up, and I was just pointing out the fact that, from my experience, not a lot of people were like really gun ho and supportive of Transformers 2. A lot of the word of the mouth out of that movie was negative out of the gate. I think word of mouth usually sets in fairly early with the first set of people, because they tend to color people's expectations of a film. So, you know, you can see this especially when you see, like, a drop-off. Like, for example, going back to Green Lantern quickie, it dropped off 66% in its second weekend, which means it had a terrible word of mouth. So yeah. It's not like people are coming out saying, oh, you know, Green Lantern's good, it's fun, whatever. It had a terrible word of mouth, and there's no denying the fact that people weren't happy with what they got. So in 2 years' time, they really, unless somehow their opinions of it drops even further... I think the general consensus is it's not going to be a really well-remembered comic book movie.
No, I thought, well, yeah, that is kind of what I meant as well. And it didn't get, with the word of mouth thing you were saying, it also didn't get very good reviews, did it, which wouldn't have helped with people. Because I know people don't tend to, like, really care that much about reviews, because you should kind of make up your own opinion about something. But when the general opinion of critics is that it's not very good, then... That doesn't really bode well for a film, does it? As such,
I was gonna say that you can have good reviews and bad word of mouth, and that would still hurt you. And you can have bad reviews and good word of mouth. At the end of the day, it's really what the like most people care about, like what their friends, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, you know, their husband, wives, sons, daughters say about a movie instead of like a general reviewer. So, like for example, if you know, like all of you came out of, you know, like most of you, like Green Lantern, for example, we all kind of have the same followers on Twitter. Like when it came out, you had people like, this was an awful movie, but you also had the people like, I enjoyed it. And there were some that I thought were a bit extreme, like, this is an awesome movie, I don't know what critics are talking about and stuff like that. That's kind of a mixed opinion coming out of it from the people we kind of have as mutual followers. Now, if I had, like, Sucker Punch, for example, almost everybody who seen it on my timeline was like, this is an awful movie, and you'd have one or two defend it. At that point, it becomes more of a general, okay, this might not be a great movie to see in theaters because the general consensus is it's not really worth it. And yeah. I think that's kind of the difference. And I think word of mouth is more important than advertisement and marketing and reviews, because at the end of the day, it's what other people who you consider peers or equals or whose opinion you trust that really gets you to go to a movie or not.
I guess because I've just realized as well, actually, because Transformers Dark of the Moon, which has just came out, has actually got really pretty poor reviews as well. But I think that's got quite a good word of mouth around it, and that is making a ton of money. It's 200 million already, hasn't it? In America. And that seems to... Like, in this house alone, I'm the only person who doesn't like it. My mum and dad liked it, and so did my brother, but I didn't like it, whatever. But that seems as a good word of mouth about it, even though it's not very good.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, again, it depends on what you expect from a movie. And this is why, and this is why, personally speaking, I've been against review scores on the site. One of the reasons is that, let's say I gave Transformers a 9 and I gave something like Black Swan a 9. It's not necessarily a 9 for the same thing, because what you expect from something like Black Swan and what you expect from Transformers 3 are completely different things. Mm. So you can have a good time with Transformers because you went in expecting nothing but, like, you know, gratuitous women's shot and explosion from Michael Bay, and it, you know, you got what you expected.
Would you, Earl, I've got a question. Would you go in to Transformers Dark of the Moon expecting a pornification of a children's toy? Because that's basically what it is.
Well, after the first two movies, that's kind of what I expected.
The first, I don't think the first one's quite like that one. The second one is, though, very much so. But I don't think the first one's still quite innocent in a way.
Like I said, there's certain stuff you expect from Mike, especially from Michael Bay, because it's not like he doesn't have a track record that people can kind of see what his movies are about at this point. It's not like he's, I mean, who knows? He could come out with a high drama at some point, but it's not his style.
I doubt it. I see where you're coming from, but I doubt it. Yeah.
Oh, I doubt it too, but I'm just saying that that's exactly my point. So you kind of, after what, he's been making movies for like 10, 15 years now. Bad Boys came out in the mid-90s. Mm. So, yeah, you know the kind of movies to expect from him. But this isn't the Transformers podcast. So,
no,
going back to Green Lantern, which I still haven't shared my thoughts on.
Yeah, sorry, go on, Earl.
I would like to say, as a whole, I enjoyed Green Lantern. I can see the problems everybody had with it. There are, I think what I said, there's setup without any payoff and payoffs without any setup. Yep. There's scenes that don't belong, and then scenes that they should have really expanded on. At the end of the day, I think Green Lantern is a movie that's 10 years too late to the dance. If it had came out before, like if it had came out at the start of this whole comic book movement, it really works, because as a whole, Green Lantern kind of plays like one of those, you know, like it's kind of plays like Spider-Man and all those other origin movies where it kind of has to hit all these beats. And, you know, we've kind of gotten past that point where stuff like Iron Man, The Dark Knight, X-Men First Class, even. Where they, Thor is a better example, I guess, where they don't really play as origin movies, per se. Then they kind of start to transcend that point where they kind of become, like, it's not just a comic book movie, but they can be seen as really good movies on their own. Yeah. And Green Lantern kind of harks back to, like, oh, this is a comic book movie. And I don't have a problem with that, because I think, you know, there are certain elements in comic books that really are comic booky, but they tone it down so much. Like, he spends like 10 or 15 minutes on Oa in general in an hour and 45 minute movie, and the fact that you've taken this huge space epic and pretty much Earth basing it for the entirety of the movie defeats the purpose of being Green Lantern. It could have been any superhero who goes in space for 10 minutes.
That's kind of the thing is what I was on about. Do you know at the beginning of it, I'm telling you the origin and just
okay.
It's telling you, and you're not really seeing it, are you? Maybe if you'd have seen, like, I don't know, perhaps if you'd seen more of the birth of the corpse and stuff like that, rather than just getting it into a 10-minute opening narrative with a montage or something. Maybe if that, actually don't work.
Yeah, and that's the other weird thing, and it's, I mean, I guess we can start talking about general problems with the, or general parts of the movie, is that the origin of the Green Lantern is set up in the origin of the Green Lantern. Albin Sur tells him about the Green Lantern corpse when he's giving him the ring. You don't need that at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
There's a dying alien who can explain it to him, and if not, he has a ring that can explain it to him. And if not, he can go to Owen and have it explained to him, and he does have it explained to him by Thomas Sip.
Yeah,
so. go on.
But the problem is they didn't set up, I think, Hal Jordan's character pretty well. Because they're supposed to show us that, you know, he saw his father die in a crash, and that's why he's afraid and stuff like that. But then they just, like, give us, like, little flashbacks in between, like, him falling down. It's like, they didn't set it up really well. Like, I've had people ask me, like, what is he, like, why is he afraid, you know? Is he afraid because his father crashed, or he's just generally afraid? And that's what he has to get over. So, they didn't, I don't think they set that up very well.
Also, I didn't want to interrupt Yasmin, but the thing with his father, you also only get that about halfway through the film and not at the beginning of it. And halfway through the film, you probably just gave up caring because you're already bored anyway. But
well, you don't get halfway through the film. You get it's one of the first scenes with him.
From what I remember, it's after he's got the ring, I think.
No, isn't it the scene? It's the scene when he's testing the chain and it freezes out on him.
Yeah, in the beginning.
It's one of the earliest scenes in the movie. But that's the thing, is that they do a piss poor. Like, for a movie that tries to explain everything you don't honestly need to know right away, they really skip over to. Hey, Kiss Family was another one I had issues with. Yes. They show up for one scene, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the only reason they were there, it seems, was that they needed some reason for him to have his first construct be that elaborate racetrack.
Yeah.
That was my favorite scene, actually.
It's an awesome construct, but I mean, honestly, that's the only thing that came. That and, I guess, the toy fan for his nephew. Those are, like, the only things that came out of that scene with his family. Like, I thought they weren't even in danger in the climax or anything, where he has to, like, make a choice between saving some other people or saving them, or they don't show up again. They could have cut that scene entirely from the movie, and it wouldn't have made a difference.
I don't want to skip right to the end of the film, Earl, but the climax of the film, shouldn't some of the corps have actually helped him take on Parallax? Because I was wondering why Hal Jordan had to take him on his own, and why Sinestro or Tom Marie, why nobody helped him? Because you see all the corps are nowhere, and then they don't even do anything. They don't help him take on, considering how Parallax is supposed to be one of the evilest, like, creatures in the universe, and the corps don't even want to help Hal Jordan take him on. Or was that, did they do it that way because that was their way of, like, showing Hal Jordan become the hero or something?
Well, okay, that talks to two problems I had in the movie, another two problems I had in the movie. And yes, I have a lot of problems with this movie, but as a whole, I enjoyed it. The first, and I mean, we're already at the end, we might as well talk about it, is he defeats Parallax. And then they show up.
You had this.
We were just hanging out back here. And I thought that was stupid. Like, were they there the whole time? Did they arrive too late? Who knows? The other thing, and this is this goes back again to scenes without setup or setup without payoff, is that he actually goes to Owen and he talks to the Guardians to try to get them to rally the corpse to stop Parallax from attacking Earth. And they basically say no.
Yep.
And then he's like, okay, I'll do it on my own. I'm like, what was the point of asking him for help if you're just going to decide to do it on your own without, you know, feeding your case anymore? Like, he could have saved himself a trip and just done it on his own anyhow.
Could have sent him a text or something.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. You made it across. But that's basically what it amounted to. It's like, okay, I need, you know, you have to trust in me. You need to save my planet. And they're like, no. He's like, okay, I'll do it on my own. I'm like, really? He just gives up really quickly in this movie.
Yep.
It's the same thing with the training scene, where he pretty much quits after half a day.
Oh, that training scene was way too short.
I know.
Way too short.
We'll go back to that in a second. Let's finish up with the Parallax and the climax, since you're already there. And, you know,
God,
we don't want to jump
Parallax.
Do you mean the Galactus and the climax?
I actually enjoyed his design.
Yeah, I liked him more than I did Galactus. It worked better for Parallax than it did for Galactus, and at least they gave him, like, a face.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, and this is, you know, again, it speaks to being a comic book, is a giant cloud still looks just hunkier than a giant yellow bug. So, I mean, it's... Go on.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read much, but I know for certain that Parallax is not supposed to be look like a big giant, like, turd-covered octopus or whatever he was. And when you're laughing at the bad guy, you know that he screwed up a bit. So, yeah. Oh, another thing I didn't understand is that, I think Anthony was talking about this, it's like, they have a problem, it's like, why'd they make the ring in the first place? They decided never, they're like, oh no, we're never going to use yellow energy, we don't need it, and it's buried in some lost sector, and then they just, like, as soon as, like, it shows up, they're like, okay, let's make a ring, and then they don't even use it. It's like, what?
Well, no, they're not using it, goes back to Hal again.
Yeah.
When he goes to Owen, he pleads their case. He's like, give me a chance or whatever. I'll try to do this. You don't need to turn to Fear. Because he had seen, you know, he's seen what Fear had done to Hector Hammond at that point. So that, you know, that was kind of set up, and that, you know, they did, like, again, they did the groundwork. They showed why, you know, like, the fear isn't a strong emotion and how it could be corrupt people. And, it, you know, they set that up with Sinestro as well. And I also like the fact, and this is going back to the training scene, since we're apparently jumping back, is the fact that Hal Jordan doesn't beat Sinestro in a fight, which is something I hope they pay up to in the sequel. Because, yeah. You know, except, you know, usually in these movies, you kind of get, like, the mentor-mentee, and the mentee ends up beating the mentor at the end, and that's when he kind of ascends. But Sinestro has to turn evil, so it makes no sense to have Hal Jordan beat him in the first movie, because then you kind of lose that in the second movie. Like, can he beat Sinestro? Because the last time they fought, Sinestro just beat the crap out of him.
They should have, I think they should have spent a bit more time with Hal Jordan and Sinestro.
Yes, to be honest. Definitely.
They should have spent more time in Owa in general.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, granted, it's all CG and I get that, but I think that was, it's kind of like Asgard in Thor, is that that's the most interesting part of the movie, because we all kind of know what Earth looks like. We don't know what Owa and Asgard looks like, and they make for very fanciful, you know, things. It's one of the reasons Star Wars does so well, is because of all these alien races and planets we get to discover along with the cast and crew.
Yeah. Well, it's what you go to the movies for, isn't it? To see, like, alien planets and escapism. You don't want to be stuck on Earth, or, especially in a superhero film as well.
And that's what I was going to say, is that we've kind of gotten to the point where, like, Spider-Man's New York, Iron Man's New York, and California at times, Batman's technically Chicago, you know, Superman's Metropolis and stuff like that. They're all situated on Earth. They're all kind of situated in real-life planet. You know, and it works for them because that's, but, you know, like, Thor and Green Lantern, and those are the two movies I had huge hope for, are movies that are beyond anything you usually see in a comic book movie, because it's not just somebody with superpowers, it's somebody who belongs to another world entirely. You know, in Thor's case, it's a bit different, it's a realm, whatever, but, you know, always a completely different planet, and there's a ton of alien races and stuff like that, and you get to see them, but they all kind of, it's like, oh, like, if you're a Green Lantern fan, you can pick out some people, like, oh, that's that, and that's them, and that's kind of cool, and then it's like, oh, okay, you don't see them for the rest of the movie, so it's like, oh, okay, they don't talk, we don't really know what they are, they just kind of shout, we are the core.
So they can have their own spin-off movie called The Green Lantern Corps.
Well, they could. I mean, it works for the comic books. And,
I doubt
it. You know,
after the money Green Lantern made, I doubt they're going to make spin-offs for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Green Lantern made, like, $52 million, like, opening weekend on the box office, which isn't that great considering that it's a superhero movie that costs, like, $200 million to make.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's made the budget back at this point.
Well, I think part of it is also that it's such a staggered release. Like, you know, with Thor and X-Men First Class, they kind of open at the same time worldwide. I don't think Green Lantern opens in, like, other places until, like, this month or August for some of it. So, you know, it's at the end of it. Because at this point, we are seeing a trend in general of movies making more money on a global scale than just in the States.
Yeah, but what's actually weird is that Green Lantern, I think it opened the same week, like the opening weekend, and no one really liked it here as well.
But I think that's going to be an issue. It's like, if, you know, like, even if it does open places, it's going to be like, oh, Americans didn't like it, so why should we see it? But, I mean, they kind of already greenlit a sequel, which honestly is the biggest thing to me, is because I think it does have the potential to go much further
as
a franchise. And
I kind of understand what you're saying, but the first film should have been great. You shouldn't really have to wait for a sequel, yeah.
If
you do the origin right, you can do it really well and make a brilliant film, and that's why Batman Begins is fantastic. I mean, The Dark Knight is one of the greatest superhero films ever made, but Batman Begins is just as great a movie because of what they did with his origin, and they spent time getting in there. But with Green Lantern, they tried to have too much going on at once, and then
And I think that's the other thing, is that, and it's kind of funny you bring up Batman Begins, because they actually both play with the same theme of fear. Batman, apparently, you know, does it much better, which is kind of sad, because fear is a general theme of the Green Lantern mythos, because it is the enemy of willpower.
Yeah.
And they both play with fear, and they do it in, and again, it's the thing, is that you never, like, with with Batman, and this is going to turn to the Batman podcast like usual, with Batman you kind of understand where his fear comes from and why he has it. Where Green Lantern, as we said before, his fear is kind of, they mask his fear in this whole hyper-masculinity where he's, you know, he's not fearful, he's just a daredevil. And it could have worked if they did it, you know, like how Jordan's kind of a cocky person in the comics and stuff like that, but yep. He doesn't really come off like that here. He just comes off as childish, I guess it's the term, where it's like he doesn't take anything seriously or anything. Like, I think Nick posted a link about, I forgot what site it was, but like basically they called Hal Jordan a dick throughout the course of the movie. Like, oh yeah, I beat the simulated fans, I cost millions of their jobs and this company a huge contract. But, you know, I got to do what I wanted to do, so whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of a dick move. And he ends up beating up... Okay, granted, they did attack him, but he ends up beating up the people who he caused to use their job. That's kind of a dick move. Again, to be fair, he didn't know what the ring was capable of at the time. But, yeah, he doesn't... I mean, he has his moments... He doesn't have the heroic character arc that most characters go through, where they start off at a certain point, they kind of realize that this is their calling and they have to ascend to the top, and then they become the hero they're destined to be. He doesn't really have that arc in this movie. He's kind of a dick at the beginning, and he's still kind of a dick at the end. The only difference is
no character progression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the big issue that as this, because I mean. I thought that Ryan Reynolds did decently in the role.
Yeah, he did alright, to be fair to him, he did alright, yeah.
But the character went nowhere, and that's kind of a hard thing to do when it's your central character. And you know, like, even the Hector Hammond was an interesting character, but he didn't have much screen time. Sinestro, interesting character, didn't have much screen time. I might as well go back to the end and talk about this really quickly. Is that his whole turn really came out of nowhere at the end?
Yeah, that had no setup or anything at all. It's like he just did that probably so to set up a sequel easier for themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm hoping that this is like an Iron Man 2 situation
I was going to actually talk about that. About Hal Jordan, I think they got the kind of fearless, you know, square-jawed superhero aspect of the movie kind of right. I mean, Ryan Reynolds manages to pull this off and adding a kind of mellow rebel kind of vibe to it. You know, he drives a muscle car, he sleeps around, stuff like that. You know, he keeps you interested, but he doesn't reach Robert Downey Jr. levels where you just cannot stop watching, which kind of ruins the point of the movie, because I've heard that Green Lantern was supposed to be DC's comeback to Marvel's Iron Man.
Yeah.
And, because Marvel took Iron Man, and Iron Man isn't really a household name, like, not something you can be familiar with. No, before that, I hadn't really heard of Iron Man. It's like Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, you know. So DC was like, okay, we can do this. We can take Green Lantern, you know, which has a kind of good core base in comics. So it's kind of like DC testing to see if they can make more movies like this. Like, can they take characters not many people know about and make them, make a movie that's a blockbuster? Like, on all of, like, unfortunately, they didn't. If they'd made a Flash movie, I think that would have worked out better. Like, even had Ryan Reynolds play Wally. But they had, like, to be fair, they had too big of a challenge to overcome dealing with the Green Lantern, because Nolan's Batman movie was huge, and that's where their bar is set. So, now, was it the worst comic book movie I've seen? Not really. I bet all of you can list, like, at least 10 that are worse. I'm sure there are others, but they're filming the new Batman movie, the new Superman movie is, like, eh. And because of the count, like... I just, you know, that's why it didn't seem as good as we would have liked it to be.
And the other thing, and this is kind of, Marvel's competitors in so much a way, but really the big thing is that with next week is the Harry Potter 7.2 finale.
Yeah.
And with Harry Potter done, that would have been Warner Brothers' golden goose for the last 10 years, and they need franchises to fill that gap. And, you know, next time they're set, they have Batman, which will do well. But they have nothing else after that, which is why they were so counted on Green Lantern to do so well, and why they poured money into it. Because most companies probably would not have spent so much money on a first go of a movie that has no proven audience. Because, I mean, it's what, $250 million or something like that with marketing and stuff like that?
I thought they spent $100 million on marketing.
Well, I don't know where I read that.
I'm sure it's
the number.
I thought it's $300 million, including marketing.
I don't know. I mean, numbers are always quite different, but I guess from $200 to $300 million was spent on this movie, and most people probably would not have done that for a first time around. Mm. Granted, you have Ryan Reynolds, who kind of is
he's not really a solo star, though, is he?
No, I want to say he's a household name, but I don't think he's a movie star.
Yeah, and he's more known for like romantic comedies and stuff. He's not really known for like solo action movies as such on his own. So,
but neither was Christian Bale at the time.
That's true, but he did have a good filmography behind him with like American
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire. Well, Spider-Man. Nobody expected Spider-Man to be a bigger hit as what it was.
Yeah.
So
okay. Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, Downey Jr. Downey Jr. got that role because of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
But even then, that's kind of a more of a niche film than it is anything mainstream. I mean, you can go back Christopher Reeves,
although
Keaton.
Going back to Iron Man, though, Iron Man did actually have quite a big name cast with Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow. I forget his name. Jeff Bridges and Terrence Howard.
I mean, again, it's the Superman mentality, is you kind of cast a... I don't want to say Robert Downey Jr., because he was known at the time, but, you know, Christopher Reeves was a no-name actor at the time, and then they cast a bunch of well-known people around him to film, and they kind of did that with Batman Begins, because, you know, Christian Bale wasn't that well-known, but you had Morgan Freeman, you had Michael Caine, you had Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I've heard Nolan said he did that, actually. He followed similar formula to Superman. He has actually said that in interviews, so I guess so. Christian Bale, like, he's a much bigger star after Batman Begins than he was before it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's going to happen to some of them, because at the end, even though you have some of them have great film, films in their backyard, is that Batman is that film. I mean, it's what, the ninth best, highest grossing film of all time. People have seen it, and people are kind of interested in their other works, but, you know, we're not here to pat Batman on the back. This did have a decent cast. I mean,
yeah, besides Carol Ferris, the supporting characters were actually pretty good in it.
Yeah, I mean, very quickly we can touch on. I really dug Amanda Waller in this film.
Plump woman. I don't want to.
Well, she wasn't that plump in this movie.
Yeah, but she's in.
She is. Yeah, she's kind of fat in the comics and stuff like that. But
I remember her from the Justice League cartoon, actually.
Yes, and that's why I love her. She's an awesome character. Andrea Bassett plays her, and she said the same thing. I think she has potential to become
Nick Fury.
Yeah, DC's Nick Fury.
But didn't they kill her off?
No. There's no signs that she's dead.
I know that, but it did really feel like they killed her off.
It did, but...
Because I was wondering, what the hell are you doing killing her for? She was alright.
That reminds me of something else I had issues with, and is how did he find him in that lab?
Plot holes.
Like, he just shows up out of nowhere.
Hammond.
When he's in the lab, and then he just bursts through the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just kind of bursts through the wall randomly. I'm like, you were just by at the riverfront. How did you find him? How did you know there was trouble there?
Well, I'm actually going to try and defend the movie here, but can't his ring see through walls?
That's not even the point, I guess. It's like, how did he know there was trouble?
But I didn't know that his rings could see through walls, so it didn't really make sense.
You wouldn't get that impression from the movie, because the ring didn't do much in the movie, did it? You
know? Yeah, it doesn't explain anything either, like it does in the comics.
The constructs were boring. I was
actually kind of like them.
Some of them were good. Like I said before, like the scene with the race car was actually my favorite scene in the movie. Someone I went with said that was a bit silly, but I actually quite liked that, and I wanted more stuff like that.
I actually enjoyed that one. That was one of my favorites. But it is, like, he did a whole lot of work for something. He caused a lot more trouble with the whole racetrack setup instead of just like putting an anchor on it to stop it.
He could have just put like a bubble around the plane or something, couldn't he? But no, he kind of made it into this whole set piece thing. But other than that,
other than that, I got nothing.
Yeah, I was kind of confused about Hector Hammond, because in the comics, he's kind of like macho scientist who gets the girl and someone you don't want to mess with, and he has the looks and the smarts. And then in the movie, you have like Hector Hammond, who's like the geeky outcast. So I was actually kind of insulted for some reason. It's like, oh, okay, DC, half your audience are like Hector Hammond. So
I was about to say, I was actually, it seems like they toned it down, but his whole fixation with Carol.
Yeah,
I was so confused about that. It's like, what? It's like, and it's kind of hard to believe that Hector, Hal, and like Carol are like best friends like since childhood.
Because
he's like the age difference or whatever.
I was about to say, it doesn't make it seem like they were best friends from childhood. It makes it seem like they knew each other.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it was really creepy because I did not get anything. It's like, oh, okay, you're her brother, but you're like in love with her, and I don't know. Everyone was like, yeah, okay.
Okay. What I got was it's like the teen dramas, you know, like how you always have that one friend who's in love with the girl, but she doesn't know it. She doesn't pay any attention to him.
It's your brother.
But no, they're not related. it's kind of like that where he's kind of like, he's enough with her. She pays him no mind, and she kind of has a thing for Hal, and Hal has a thing for her, but they can't work because they're so different personality-wise. He takes nothing seriously, and she's just all business all the time.
I got disconnected then. Are you on about Hector Hammond and Carol Ferris?
Yeah.
You didn't really get into that much, and you kind of have to guess that Hector Hammond was in love with Carol Ferris.
Well, you don't have to guess. I mean, they do show it.
No, you do have to kind of guess.
The hint, though, Earl, do you know how they introduced it? By him having newspaper clippings of her on his desk. That could mean anything. That is how they tried to introduce interest in the leading lady. That is...
Okay.
Like, Lazy.
Maybe that could mean anything to you, but to me, I think that kind of signified that he was a bit more in love with her than she was to him. And it's kind of like the creepy, like it's the creepy shine to the love that some, you know, people have in movies and stuff like this. But again, I do get your point. It's not really well. I actually thought it was wiser for them to kind of tone it down because it would have come off really weird if he's like this ultra sketchy dude, because he doesn't have to be sketchy and evil.
The actor played him really creepy as well, though. So they should have done a few rewrites and just really just went for it. But I guess if they did it as a kids' film, then they probably toned it down a bit.
Well, from what I understand, I don't think this film needed any more rewrites.
Yeah, that is true. But the way Peter Sarsgaard, I think his name is, played Hector Hammond, because he was really good as the character for what he was given and what he was working with. So they could have really milked into that love interest he's got with Blake Lively's character, but, you know.
Carol Ferris.
Yeah, the gossip girl. I actually referred to her as that on my Twitter when I wanted people to compare her to Emma Frost. Betty Draper.
I actually replied. I told you that I think Blake Lively was much worse than... Mm.
Which is saying a lot, because January Jones is terrible as Emma Frost.
January Jones is probably the worst thing I've seen all year, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'll probably agree with that, actually.
But yes, you wanted to touch on somebody's father?
Yes. Tim Robbins as whatever the hell the first name was.
Senator Hammond.
Robert Hammond. God damn it, Tim Robbins ruins every movie he's in, and this is no exception. Am I the only one who was bugged whenever he was on screen? Like, just...
He wasn't really.
He wasn't on screen long enough for him to bother me. He just kind of came off as like the cheesy politician.
Hmm.
You know, nothing out of the ordinary. It's kind of like a stereotype at this point. He kind of always plays like cheesy businessman.
War of the Worlds.
Oh, he's really good in War of the Worlds.
Oh, he's ruined that as well.
I was about to say, he ruins that movie too.
Oh, well, no, I was just going to
say that,
that
but
sorry.
The movie was already ruined at that by
oh,
that
what? You don't like Spielberg's War of the Worlds?
No.
Oh,
shit.
Oh, careful. You're shitting on the classics there, Dylan. Learn some
wait, how is that a classic?
It's 5 years old. It's better than the other one. Have you seen the other War of the Worlds movie? Because that one is terrible.
Isn't that one also old?
Yeah, it's from 50s or 60s. They're not even tripods. They're, that's the, yeah, James will say, and that's in the book. That's how H.G. Wells wrote it. Sure.
Yeah, well, maybe H.G. Wells should lay off the crack.
Oh!
Wow. So we're insulting H.G. Wells now, too.
You know who H.G. Wells is, don't you?
Yes, and I said that knowing that.
Oh, God, I'm not going to.
Okay. Germs will save us.
That should be any other podcast.
Any other podcast? Any other characters we want to touch on?
Have we mentioned Carol Ferris being really shitty and pointless and badly?
Oh, okay. Yeah, Blake Lively is like, when I think Carol Ferris, I think of like someone who's like young, beautiful, but at the same time, you respect that person. Blake Lively's acting was flat. You know, she looked good. I'll give her that, but that's all I'll give her. She, as you're going through the movie, she kind of grows into her role as Carol a bit, but there was absolutely no connection with her, like, her acting and the kind of hotshot businesswoman we're meant to buy, like, businesswoman actress to buy. And to be honest, like, the Hal Carol scenes were kind of pissing me off. I was kind of like, okay, is this going to make up the entire movie, you know, and wasn't even, like, a good, they weren't even that, you know, interesting. So, I thought it ended a bit too cute. I was like, okay, can we go to ONL, please?
I did check that one scene where when she unmasks him.
Yeah.
And he continues
she guessed who he was.
Yeah, and he continues to put on the voice.
That's quite funny. It's also that scene on the balcony reminded me a bit of Superman, though, which annoyed me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scenes that you can kind of say, and I think this is something that's going to happen as we go further and further with comic book movies, is it's like, this seems like it comes from this and that. Because I was going to say, the other thing with Carol is that it seems like it's a rule that you have to have a love interest in a comic book movie.
No, you do.
Even if it doesn't really make that much sense.
I know, but they should have
rolled it. For this movie, I'd rather have not had a love interest. It's like you have to put it in there somewhere. If we didn't have the Hal Carroll stuff, I'd be I'd be fine just watching that movie, no problem.
But, I mean, I understand why she is part of his mythos, but she didn't have to be a love interest. She could have just been, like, his boss.
Yeah.
They could have had a history together or something, but it didn't need to be like, oh, yeah, you know, we slept together before and that didn't work out for us, so let's just harp on it the entire movie.
I don't think it was the worst injection of a love interest, or the most pointless and uncharacteristic injection.
I was going to ask which is your favorite and least favorite love interest in a comic book movie to date.
Oh, I'm going to have to think about that, because that's a hard one.
Yeah,
least favorite... Probably Rebecca Romijn Stamos in Punisher because he doesn't need a love interest.
Do you know what? That is the only film where I agree with you where the lead character does not need a love interest because his wife's been killed and Punisher doesn't need a love interest.
That's the perfect time to need a love interest is when your family's been mauled down. Of course you want to start a new family right away while you're seeking revenge.
Give him some women to sleep with, but he doesn't need to, like, romance with anyone.
I don't think... I was going to say my favorite is probably still the original, Christopher Reeves and Margaret Kidder.
Mine might be...
Without thinking, I'd probably agree with that.
There's some good ones. I understand there's problems like the Amnesia Kiss and stuff like that.
I'd probably just go with Pepper and Tony in Iron Man.
I
love Pepper.
The reason I don't like Pepper and Tony is because that's not an actual comic book relationship, is it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Is it?
Had them sleeping with each other. So.
Yeah, well, and then he's, like, in love with her, and she is, but she doesn't want to admit it, and it's so weird.
I thought she was married to Happy.
He's dead.
I think, actually, Fraction put it... Pepper wasn't in the comics that much, but then when Matt Fraction came on, and when, like, the movie came out, Matt Fraction had her in the comics more and made her, like, the second... a supporting character. Like, she's in pretty much every issue now. Now she's got her own armor, which is actually quite cool. It doesn't sound that good. Like, I tell you, Pepper Potts has got an Iron Man armor. It doesn't really sound good, but it is actually really good in the comics.
It is.
Mm. She also owns the company in the movie, so she's owning
Pepper, though. Oh,
yeah. Is it just because she's hot?
Well, I like Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper. I just like the character as well, and it is because she's got red hair. What?
Oh, you're a ginger ever.
But I kind of want to see Peter Parker and Mary Jane in the Spider-Man films.
I actually don't like those two.
If one and two, they would be really good.
I think that's my worst pick. I really did not like Peter Parker and Mary Jane. It's just, I don't know, I think it was the actress. To be honest, I really do not like any love scenes in, like, comic book movies. Except, like, the Pepper and Tony one. Because they didn't exaggerate. They didn't go, like, make it the entire movie. You know, they kept it. It was a love scene, you know, like, they like each other. Okay, we get that. But they didn't make that in the entire movie. I think that's why it went out really well.
Yeah.
I've got the worst one for you. Sue Storm and Reed Richards. End of discussion.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they get married, and you cannot tell that they're in love at all. There's no chemistry.
I'd just say extra in Daredevil, because he just gets her killed, and then she comes.
Shit on Daredevil.
No, that is an abomination, goddammit.
You're a villain. You don't like War of the Worlds. Your opinion is not valid anymore.
People who like War of the Worlds don't have valid opinions.
Well, back to Green Lantern again.
Yes. Derailed.
Well, I mean, it is the, like, there's not much to talk about with it. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, my biggest problem with it is it seems to take pieces from every other comic book movie and doesn't place it together well. It just seems like it could have used, like, an extra 20 minutes and some cut footage
put the scenes, like, together instead of, like, zigzagging all over the place.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, because, again, it goes back to them, you know, being Earthbound. It's like you kind of have, like, three story lines into, you have the Hal story, the Sinestro, and then the Hector one. And
story, I just thought he popped up every so often.
I was going to say, that's the thing with Sinestro.
Because they hired a great actor to play the character, so they may as well give him some scenes.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to have to turn him evil eventually, so that's kind of introduce him, but... Yeah, you don't really get a feel for his character. He does have, you know, he has screen time. Oh, that reminds me. Annoying best friend.
Oh, god damn it.
Oh, the guy from Green Lantern, Because he was a dick.
Why was
he? See, people don't think there's a love interest. I don't think he needed to be in there, to be honest.
No, he didn't. He did not. The annoying best friend never needs to be around.
Yeah, I can't. Well, I don't know. What other film has an annoying best friend? I mean,
there's a ton of. What's it called? Daredevil.
Well, Foggy is supposed
Foggy?
To be in
the Oh,
I know. Supposed to be, but he's annoying. He's an annoying character
Foggy's
in the movie.
Foggy's awesome. You can't
have Daredevil without Foggy, man.
Yeah, and you can make him a better character.
Just you don't know your stuff now if you dissing Foggy. And he was played by John Favreau, and John Favreau was really good.
Yeah, it's a good thing he decided to stop acting and direct Iron Man.
Oh, God, don't be shit.
He acts in Iron Man, actually, you know.
Yeah, he's happy. Yeah, he's happy, isn't
Which,
he? Yeah.
Is he going to be in future ones now that he's kind of...
That would be an interesting... It would be an interesting thing to work out.
Shot themselves in the foot with that one.
Well, I mean, he put himself in the movie, so...
Yeah.
I was also I was also disappointed that Stan Lee didn't have a Green Lantern cameo.
Yeah, I'll go for that. That would have actually... If either had a cameo, then I'd be saying the film was awesome.
I hated the best friend. He was really annoying. He didn't even have much screen time, but every time he did, I just was like, why are you here? How did need anybody else to talk to at this point? It's like 50 people he hasn't communicated with yet. I guess the thing we haven't really touched on, even though we've been hinting at it, are the action pieces.
There's action in it. That fucking thing where he throws it into the sun at the end, if you call that an action sequence.
I was gonna say, when he's fighting it, it's actually pretty cool because of the way
he's. I just thought of a plot hole, actually. If the sun would have killed Parallax.
Just one?
If the sun would have killed Parallax, and why didn't Abin Sur just throw it into the sun instead of keep trying to, like, lock him up?
Because he's an idiot.
Well, because Hal gets the idea from this training with Kilowog, where, like, the bigger the mass, the quicker it burns up, and he's like, oh, you know what, I'll just put him near the sun, because if anything, he's going to die before I will. So it was actually pretty, it's like a pretty stupid idea that worked out for him. It's not like, oh, this is a great idea, we'll just toss him into the sun. It's like, oh, let's see if he'll die before I die.
What I wanted to say is as well, do you know with the Earthbound scenes, all the sets just looked like they were taken from some sitcom TV show.
They were actually in San Francisco or San Diego. I'm not really sure where, but they were all in the same place. It wasn't that interesting. And I have problems with just go ahead.
No, go on, Yasmin, you were talking, I don't want to interrupt.
No, I have a problem with the sequences in space, like on OOL. Like, it looks like a really big, gigantic, like, games cutscene, and it doesn't look, like, it looks great, but, I just really didn't like the thing. It's like frozen there, you don't see it, like, you're not into it, like, in Thor, you're, like, all over the place. You get to, like, look super close at everything. But this one, you don't really get a good look at OOL. So, yeah, anyways, go ahead.
Oh, no, what I was going to say is, you know, you've got Thor, which did a really good job at juggling the Earthbound scenes and the scenes on Asgard together. And the Earth scenes on Thor were actually quite good and quite fun to watch, which was helped a lot by, like, the actors and actresses you had with, like, Natalie Portman. And, that other guy who I can't pronounce the name of because it's like Russian or something. But then you got Green Lantern and they weren't really that interesting. If they had Hector Hammond in them, they were quite interesting, but there's too many scenes in apartments where they were just talking about boring things.
Yeah,
and it's
and
like,
again,
I know, right? It's like, fuck off.
And again, it's a space-based franchise that kind of gets grounded in real-world settings way too much. It shouldn't have been on Earth as much as it was. Because, as you mentioned with Thor, one of the reasons Asgard works so well is because you not only do you get to see it, but you get to know the inhabitants as well. You get to see like them dressed up. Like, everybody in Green Lantern Corps is dressed the same, but you don't really get to know any of the members aside from Kilowog, who's there for all of, like, 5 minutes. And Michael Kirk-Duncan does an awesome job with the voice.
Mm, he does, yeah. Considering he was probably bought on, like, a month before the film got released.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Tamara was, you know, like, the Green Lanterns who got time to speak had some stuff to do.
Jeffrey.
There's a ton of interesting Green Lanterns, but none of them really have a role in the movie other than standing around that the money shot, I guess, of like everybody just hanging out there, which is also kind of odd because the movie, like the marketing pretty much focused on that 15-minute stretch on OOL more than it did on anything else. And most of the movies, I guess they realized that, most of this movie's on Earth, it's going to be kind of boring for people. So they did that. But
one thing I'm actually wondering about hopefully they do more of the Green Lanterns as a focus in the next one, but I wonder if they'll ever introduce any of the other humans or just keep Hal Jordan the only one, because I can't see them having the other human Green Lanterns if they have Ryan Reynolds playing Hal Jordan.
I don't think it makes any... I think it gets... even in comic books, you have people who are confused with the multiple Green Lanterns. I don't think you need more than one, especially being that at this point, if we get more than two movies, it'd be a miracle.
Wasn't the Hal, like, the way they wrote Hal Jordan, wasn't it a mix of, like, different guys who've worn the ring over the year? Like, he holds Hal Jordan's name and job, and he holds, like, Kyle Rayner's, like, rookie characteristics, and Guy Gardner's, like, attitude. Like, the only guy who's missing is Jon Stewart, and then again, like, Black and Angry is a bit too much to expect, even from Ryan Reynolds. So, but I don't know. I think they try to mix it up as much as they can. I don't think it would go well if they had more than one human Green Lantern.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, we shall see. I'm hoping.
I can give you a sentence, right? The reason why I'm going to watch Green Lantern 2, and it's the same reason why I watched Green Lantern 1. Mark Strong as Sinestro.
Yeah,
that's the only reason
I'm watching. It's because of that clip at the end from the, like,
yeah,
from the credits.
Honestly, right, there was no setup for it at all, but it was so cool watching him turn yellow. That was probably the best scene in the movie. There was just no setup. So if it wasn't cool, it would have just been shitty, flatty chaos.
Like I was saying before, and I got also my thoughts when I was, we were talking about this earlier, is that I hope this is like the Iron Man 2 situation, where it's a scene that's kind of like halfway through like Green Lantern 2.
Yeah,
where it's like, it's just kind of like a teaser.
That might be a bit weird, though, in a way.
Well, not really, because you can have it, you can kind of set up the movie where he turns, like, he finally decides to wait around like 30 minutes in and just show that scene.
I guess so,
You don't need him to be evil at the start of the movie right away.
Mm. It also could be comparable to, like, Bourne Ultimatum, how it, like, starts somewhere before the end of Supremacy and then continues into afterwards.
Yeah. That was an awesome reveal when I found that out too.
Yeah.
yeah. So, anything else you want to say about Green Lantern?
I don't know.
It was interesting how they had at the end of the credits, they like, buy these paperback trades.
Oh, they didn't, please.
Yes, they did.
Please tell me they did it. Oh my god. You are joking. Nope. Jeff Johns getting his spokes plugged again.
It's the same ad, I'm pretty sure, as if you read a DC book and it's like, check out these adventures of Green Lantern, and then it has like 8 books, including Secret Origin.
And I think that's a fantastic idea.
No, I think it works. That's the reason why Green Lantern is the only DC book, the only DC book besides Batman that makes it into the top 10.
I'm not Green Lantern or not, I think in general that's a good idea. Because again, you have a lot more people going to see movies than buying comic books. So it makes some sense that you should try to create some crossover. It
should have been at the beginning of the movie. Why put it on the end? Everyone's going to have left anyway.
Well, that's the other thing is that people won't see.
People do stay, though, because of the thing that Marvel does where every movie has something at the end of the credits except for the...
Oh, do they? Nobody stays.
And X-Men didn't have anything.
X-Men didn't have...
No, I waited. I was pissed, though. I actually waited.
I was, like, waiting, and then I realized, oh, no, this really isn't going to have anything, so I just, like, clapped.
I usually sit through the credits on all movies just for the hell of it, just in case there's something. So it doesn't really bother
me. I left early for Pirates 4 as well, and apparently there was some at the end of Pirates 4, and then I read it online, and I was like, yeah, I'm glad I left.
Yeah, it's kind of like how I stayed at the end of Pirates 3, because they showed you what happened with William and Kate or whatever. And it's just like they meet and kiss, and that's it. I'm like, oh, I waited 15 minutes for this. while we're figuring stuff, I also would like to recommend, and this, you know, this was actually a good thing DC does. Marvel's kind of iffy on this, is Green Lantern Emerald Warrior. No, Emerald Knight.
The shorts, yes.
Yeah,
last time I checked, that was £8 on Amazon.co.uk, which isn't actually that bad for a Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly decent movie, and unlike this movie, it gives you a much better look at the entire corpse, and not just Hal Jordan. It's set up interestingly. It's kind of like a short story set up where each corpse member is kind of telling a story about, like, I think there's Hal Jordan, there's Albinser, there's Sinestro, there's like a warrior, there's Kurowak's training, and it's set on the backdrop of this huge fight, which isn't, it has some really awesome fight scenes. So if you want, you can just like interject these fight scenes into the Green Lantern live action movie, and it will make it better as a whole, I assume.
I want to check that out at some point. And it's got Peggy from Mad Men in one of the scenes or one of the shorts.
I think Nathan Fillion is Hal Jordan again.
Yep.
So
he should have played him in the movie, but I guess he's too old, isn't he?
Well, apparently
he's like the same age as Ryan Reynolds.
Is he?
Apparently Nathan Fillion should play everybody.
He should play the Flash. No, since he can't play Green Lantern, he should play the Flash.
Yeah, I could see that, actually.
But he'd probably make a better Barry Allen than Wally West, and I don't want a Barry Allen Flash movie, so I don't know. But if it's well written, you could actually put them both in it, as long as they write it right, which they won't, so they probably should just stick to one.
Just have both of them both played by Nathan Fillion, and don't explain it at all.
Yeah, and then everyone would be happy just because Nathan Fillion is in a movie, a lead role. Actually, why isn't Nathan Fillion in the Uncharted movie? Because I thought he'd be perfect.
people say he won't be, well, basically because people think he's not, like, what's the word, like, limber enough to do all the climbing and shit, I guess. I don't know.
Mark Wahlberg
is. He's
not
really a man of action. Well.
And Mark Wahlberg is.
Not
is
really
Mark Wahlberg
either,
playing
but,
him? Yeah.
No, I don't think so, because they got the new director
now. Oh, I
thought
it was.
And the only reason Wahlberg was doing it is because the director of The Fighter likes him, essentially. And then he backed out, now they have a new director, and I think they need to recast.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I think that should do it for us this week, but as of right now, I honestly don't know what we're talking about for next week, because I think O.E. Anthony has seen Transformers.
I've
sworn off like not watching Transformers movies, and then it just turned out to be, yeah.
The only positive thing I can really say about it is that it's got credits, but no, that, it is actually better than Revenge of the Fallen, but that's
which
mainly
isn't
because
saying much.
Yeah, it's mainly because it's not got racist robots in it, and it's not got huge giant Transformer balls either, but
does
there
it
is
have
just
all
as
the
much
plot holes like the band.
Yes, it does. It has all the stuff that does not make sense, and it is very pornographic and it's very sexist. But no one seems to care because you know you switch off your brain, you go in for some damn fun. We're gonna see some shit get blown up. We don't care because we don't mind if Hollywood treats us like idiots because we'll just switch off our brains.
Michael
Star Spangled Bay, you guys. I was waiting for a lot of explosions, and I did not get a lot of explosions. So I was very disappointed, Michael Bay.
But yes.
I do my idiot hick voice, but I don't want to offend any more people than I already
have. Yeah, I was about to say, we've already kind of offended people.
Yeah, I'm sorry
people,
about
so that.
I'm sorry.
It's just, so yes, as usual, you can find us on iTunes. At this point, I've just put the link with the podcast, so hopefully you figured that out at some point. We, you know, the phone number's still there if you ever want to call. I honestly don't know what we're using it for at this point. yes, it is. And like I said, we'll be back next week with an episode to be determined, I guess, since none of us wants to watch Transformers 3.
It's 52 as well. It's like a year since it started, isn't it, really? Because each week it's 52 weeks. Is that how it's worked out?
It's not how we did a year. Our year actually is up in April.
Oh, okay.
If somebody was paying attention to episode 50 last week when I was explaining how this whole podcast came about,
yeah,
you
Dylan,
understand.
You should have been paying attention, Dylan.
But yes, for Dylan, Anthony, Asmin, and myself, this has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 51.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Space. It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me. But from the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of evil light. The fear tries to swallow me like I'm just some guy with an emerald. Everything. A purple man obsessed with me, so lost to the dark and it's now extinct. From it and good it once possessed, pledged to the oath now laid to rest. No time for doubt, no quick eject, don't give in to fear like my father said.